Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, I found it. Not only did I find the story that I was trying to locate yesterday while we were broadcasting live from the Montana Farm Bureau Convention in Missoula, not only did I find the story that I wrote for our Montana Talks website, but I found the audio as well. The audio takes us back to the Farm Expo, to the KATQ Radio Farm Expo in Plentywood earlier this year, back in March. Yeah, that's where I caught up with Clayton Lohr with the Montana Grain Growers Association, who was there. And what he did, I loved it because, you know, we hear numbers all day long. We hear numbers. We hear statistics. Well, this is what's going on with wheat prices. Well, this is what's going on with cattle prices. But put it in perspective. Put the wheat prices of today in perspective of what it was back in the 1970s. Put the cattle prices today in perspective of what that means compared to, say, the 1970s. And when it comes to cattle prices, Gene Curry did that for us yesterday. So we have so much content that we were able to capture from the Montana Farm Bureau Convention yesterday that we couldn't get to it all yesterday. I recorded a lot of early morning conversations, some off-air conversations as I caught up with folks like Gene Curry and others. And so we're going to have some of those highlights for you here today. And then we should have time to get to your phone calls here a little bit later in the hour as well. Before I take you back to the Farm Expo in Plentywood earlier this year and my conversation with the grain growers, here's Gene Curry of Valier Montana Rancher yesterday in Missoula.
Well, of course, the thing that's really standing out in farm and ranch country is the value of a beef animal. Ranchers are happy, you know, even the ones that were unfortunate in some ways that they sold early this year, they still sold for way more money than they'd ever sold for, and they're happy. And in our country, the calves actually are coming in heavy. We were really dry. We're still really dry, but we had a little shower, some rain end of July, first part of August, and apparently it just did the trick. We had crops that were way better than I thought they would be, but the calves are coming in heavy, looking good. So what I hear, the breed-up's been pretty good. So most ranchers have a big smile on their face.
But what he then gets into, and I'll start with that coming up here right after the break, is he says, okay, prices are good for us ranchers, but think about how many calves you have to sell to purchase a new pickup. How many calves do you have to sell today in order to purchase a new pickup today compared to how many calves you would have had to sell, say, 20, 30 years ago in order to purchase a new pickup today? So prices are high when you're selling, but prices are high for everything else. So anyway, we'll hear more from Gene Curry right after this, and then we'll take you back to the Farm Expo in Plentywood with a grain growers number that puts things into perspective as well. All right, back with Montana Talks right after this.
Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
The most ranchers have a big smile on their face. Farmers, not so much.
I was going to say, that's what we heard from Casey Mott, the vice president for Montana Farm Bureau. He's got a ranch near Miles City and Custer, and he said, yeah, calves that he thought were only going to be 500 pounds ended up coming in 700 pounds. Good water ended up coming in, so you had fat cattle and good moisture.
Yeah.
And high prices.
High prices, yes.
So a nice trio there.
But, you know, you're talking about high prices, and I listened a little bit to your visit with Brian. And one of the things that I bring up, well, two things. One, I think it takes roughly the same number of minutes of an average wage earner's salary to buy a pound of beef today as it did in the mid-70s. You know, wages have kept up to what beef prices are today. And the other thing that I noticed, in the 70s, it probably took 10 or 12 steer calves to buy a new pickup. Today, it would take 30 steer calves to buy it.
That's right. Because of just the price of inflation and the way everything costs more. Hold that thought, Gene. We're going to come out of the break right now, and we'll keep the conversation going.
All right.
So that was my off-air conversation with Valier Rancher and former Montana Stockgrowers President Gene Curry. And then you heard the on-air conversation yesterday on the show, but that was the off-air conversation. What did he say? 13, 14 steer calves you would have had to sell to buy a new pickup in the 70s. He said 10 or 12 steer calves in the 70s to buy a new pickup. Today, it would take 30 steer calves to buy a new pickup. Don't those numbers put things in perspective? And meanwhile, for those of us wage earners, he says that, well, what you're paying for a pound of beef right now, you know, based on an hourly wage, is still pretty much on par with what it would have been with regard to wages back in the 70s back then as well. And that's where our friend Russell Nimitz with the Western Ag Network, who did a great job highlighting the strong cattle prices during his coverage of the Farm Bureau Convention, things in perspective. You know, he was talking about how so many ranchers are happy with the prices that they're seeing right now and with the weights. Prices are actually right where they need to be given those cost increases, the input prices, the cost of so that was a good point that Russell had made. But that reminded me, and I was trying to think of it yesterday, and I said, man, I remember we had a great conversation with wing growers where here's what we back at AQB it's a different story, of course, and they're not seeing those types of good prices right now. Let me see if I queued it up in the right spot for you.
I tell the story all the time because it really puts it in perspective. It was my grandpa in 1975 sold all of his wheat for $5 a bushel at harvest. And he went.
Grandpa, thanks for the clarification.
Yeah. Make sure everybody knows my dad isn't quite that old yet. So he went and bought a brand new combine, Massey combine with a 20-foot header, and it was $24,000. And my grandpa always said, you buy things in bushels, not dollars. So how many bushels does it take? And so that was 4,800 bushels. You'd need two of those combines today, so that'd be 9,600 bushels to buy two of them. And just a run-of-the-mill Class 7 combine today with a 40-foot header, not the biggest and best, you know, lower level, it would take around 154,000 bushels of wheat to buy that combine. And so when you look at that inflation, and you know, we're not getting 10 times, you know, well, more than that, 20 times the bushels that today than they were back then. So that's why it's important to be a part of these A groups. And you know, when we need a little help from the federal government to make ends meet, when you look at the numbers in that respect, it's easy to see how farms are struggling across the nation.
And that ties in with my conversation with Nicole Rolf from the Montana Farm Bureau with the Government Affairs, and then also the rep who was on hand from the American Farm Bureau Federation as well, and talking about the importance of a farm bill in talking about, you know, also in the midst of these trade negotiations. You know, my belief is that food security is national security, and we can't let these other countries put our family farms out of business, because if we lose these family farms, we may never get them back ever again. I mean, we're already seeing, you know, land being swept out from underneath our feet here in Montana. And we want to hold on to as much of that agricultural ground as we possibly can. It's important to our economy. But more importantly, it's just important to our lifestyle and our culture here in Montana. It's what we love so much about this state and the preservation of open space. And really, these farmers and ranchers are the best stewards of the land that there are out there. These people that call themselves environmentalists, okay, I'll spare you the rant on that one for today. These are the folks who truly care for this land. But, yeah, I wrote that story from the
from that soundbite there with the grain growers president, Clayton Lohr, back on March, in March of earlier this year, talking about the wheat prices, plus fat and happy, talking calves and prices at the Montana Farm Bureau. That story is now posted on our Montana Talks website. So if you want to go back and read the numbers that Gene Curry shared there, you can go back and share those specific numbers with your friends as well. Okay, I referenced our conversation with Montana Farm Bureau Vice President Casey Mott. I'll play some of my off-air conversations, or actually maybe some of the on-air stuff too that's important to highlight that many of you would have missed. I'll play that for you coming up right after this. And then we got to get to the government affairs angle here, talking about the one big beautiful bill and the beneficial impacts on that front, the positive news, and much more.
Did you know?
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, here you go. Some of you might have heard this conversation, but most of you, especially across the more rural parts of Montana, probably didn't get a chance to hear this conversation yet because I had to chat with him about it. It's about 7 o'clock in the morning on Wednesday. Well, because, you know, obviously it's great to have some of these folks join us live on the show. But, hey, at the Farm Bureau Convention, 9 to 10 a.m., when we're live with our statewide show, that's when they are live with their convention, debating policy resolutions, holding their elections. And, of course, yesterday, right after she was elected, the president, once again, reelected as president of the Grain Growers, we got a chance to chat with Cindy Johnson live on the show. So she stepped out and joined us. But I got a chance earlier in the morning to catch up with Casey Mott, the vice president of the Montana Farm Bureau Federation, who also ranches near Custer and Miles City.
Yeah, talking about how life has been on the ranch for the past year. You know, early on, January to May, we had a half inch of rain at the place in Miles City. But from May until now, I think we made our yearly total and then some. If you'd told me back in May that we were going to have the year that we did, I would not have believed you. We had, in fact, my brother and I, when we shipped calves on the 31st October, you know, we had some, they were nice looking calves, and we sorted the, probably one of the biggest ones off, and it's weighed 760 pounds. In May, we didn't think we were going to break 500. We had that good a year. But you know, as vice president of Farm Bureau, one of the reasons I really enjoy this organization, it's a general ag organization. You know, it's not just cattle. You know, we have grain farmers, we have sugar beets, we have bees. We have just about anything somebody can grow in the state of Montana. We have members that produce that. And so our concerns are about all commodities. And as good as we the cattlemen have it, grain farmers are not having it that well. And because we're such a large state, we did really well this summer with rain. But there's a number of parts of the state, like up here where we are in Missoula, you know, they've had some good rain in the last few weeks. But from what I understand, they did not have a good summer, and they're still considered under drought, as is a large portion of the northern part.
Yeah, I think I saw Dennis Bragg just said 55% of normal, you know, snowpack at this time of year. But, you know, we could quickly build that back, too, if things change.
Yes.
Yeah, that good tie-in, too, with this discussion over exempt wells and the water debate. Subdividers versus agriculture is one way you could put it, I guess.
That
but like
you
say, you've got folks on both sides of the fence in here. How do you see that debate taking place later this morning?
It's hard to say. You know, it's like because we have a lot of differences of opinion and a lot of different commodities, a lot of different producers, it's hard to say how this is going to go, and I would not want to try to predict. But that's the beauty of our organization. It's just we're grassroots. We have our resolutions that come from the county, and we'll discuss them here on the delegate floor, and we'll vote on them, and that will become our policy. And I don't want to try to predict how it's going to go.
One of these days, we should almost do a full show on just water and water storage because, maybe this is slightly controversial, but I've said this on the radio before. We don't have a shortage of water in Montana in some places. We just don't keep that water here in Montana. You know, the Gallatin Valley, Flathead Valley, where growth is probably the strongest and this debate is the most heated, gets a ton of water every year, right?
We just
send it downstream. So how are we tackling more water storage, more reservoirs and things like that in places like the Gallatin Valley or, you know, where they might be needed, where we hold on to that water? But these debates that you have at Farm Bureau and these types of trade associations are so important because it's why it's so important that our listeners get involved in organizations like this, because when you debate these policies on a convention floor like this and then these organizations show up in Helena, it's a powerful voice. And so what any other big debates that are going on, or just what are some of the interesting things that you're hearing about while
here? We've got a number of issues. Another Eastern Montana issue is renewable energy. You know, with the wind farms, proposed solar projects and data centers, you know, something that I had to really get up to speed on here in the last few months. We're going to have resolutions come up on all of that. And once again, we have members that are on both sides of this. And it really, what it comes down to is, does your ranch have... Did you get a contract, a wind contract, or did you not?
I was going to say, because, on one side of the fence, you've got, farmer ranchers who, if they've got a contract with the wind power company, that could save the family farmer ranch.
And has.
A lot of money. But on the other side of the fence, you've got a whole bunch of other people, they don't want to see that stuff. They don't want it destroying the horizon and other potential impacts.
You know, our family operation there north of Miles City, we are just across the fence from a wind project. Now, we didn't want wind on our ranch, but it's right across the fence. So, you could almost say that we have all the downsides. You know, they're right there, and they have the lights on all night and kind of certainly spoil your view.
The beautiful stars.
Oh yeah,
red blinking lights.
Yeah, and but we're not getting a bit of money from any wind company. So it can be a problem, and so it's going to be an interesting debate, just like exempt wells, as our members will talk about this.
Yeah. Of course, and many of you probably heard the outcome of that debate. Let's switch now. Man, I'm looking at the clock. Holy cow, the time is flying by. We still got a lot to get to here. I also got to get to, some of the really good news that we're seeing on the farm and ranch front, especially when it comes to what's coming out of Washington, D.C. I think that the soundbite that we played from Casey Mott yesterday on the show statewide was my off-air conversation with him talking about what a difference the Trump administration has made for farmers and ranchers. And Eric Moore out of Miles City was on that D.C. fly-in with Farm Bureau earlier this year, and he told us how, the red carpet was laid out for farmers and ranchers this time around compared to when oftentimes the doors were slammed in their faces during the Biden regime. Here we go, though. Let's talk government affairs. We've got Nicole Rolfe with the Montana Farm Bureau, and then Brian Glenn flew in from D.C. for the American Farm Bureau Federation.
Well, it's like you said, it's great to be here at convention. I love gathering our members all together, getting to see good friends and wonderful people from all across the state, and then listen to what is important to them and talk to them about what's our next direction, what are we doing in the coming year. We've had a really busy year, and we've seen a lot of good stuff coming out, especially on the rules side, on the federal level, that we've been able to offer comments on, both covering the rescission of the conservation lands rule, the new WOTUS rule being out. What is this, like WOTUS 10.0 at this point?
We've been hearing about WOTUS, the waters of the U.S. now, for what, 10 years, 12
least.
Years? Because it started under the Obama regime.
Yes.
Trump 45 peeled it back.
Biden or Obama 2.0 brought it back again. Now Trump 47, but you've got to go through a process to basically do away with it, right?
That's right. They are actually, it's a new rule again, replacing the Biden era rule. The Biden era rule did not fully address the things that the Supreme Court directed them to do in Sackett. And this rule, we believe, is really going to pull the regulation itself back into line with the Clean Water Act and actually provide farmers, ranchers, any other users of water and land with the clear rules that we need. We'll be digging into that. Of course, it came out on Monday and we were already in convention, but we've got a great team in D.C., Brian and his colleagues, all digging into that, and we'll be looking forward to offering comments to make the farmer voice heard. But really positive things we're seeing right now, and I mean, the biggest thing for I think that folks will remember is the Supreme Court got rid of the significant nexus test, which was just an ambiguous, non-scientific term that the rule had included before, and so it's not in there, and, you know, so the light is at the end of the tunnel, we hope, and we want to get a good, solid rule over the finish line this time.
Yeah, Brian Glenn with American Farm Bureau, our listeners are up to speed on WOTUS and the history there, where basically the far-left activists wanted to take, if you just had an intermittent stream that was barely on your land, or a tiny puddle, they wanted to now regulate that under the federal government. But the opportunity now is, okay, how do we stop this back and forth of this administration puts it in, this administration takes it out? How do we get Congress to codify this stuff once and for all to just stop this nonsense from coming up ever again?
Yeah, I think it's a great question, and I think Nicole covered it well. This new proposed rule that's come out for comment, which Nicole mentioned, my colleagues at the home base in D.C. are working through right now and seeing what the details are. But I think on first glance, I mean, we put out a statement earlier this week recognizing that this new rule that they've come forward with recognizes farmers and ranchers for the conservation efforts that they do, gives them flexibility to still be able to farm, while also recognizing the importance of conserving our water system. So I think it's a, you know, again, on initial review and looking through this, it seems like it's a step in the right direction. And we'll have more to come, and certainly a lot of, I'm sure, as my colleagues work through that.
Yeah, and all right, what else is he tracking with the American Farm Bureau back in Washington, D.C.? We'll get to that here coming up after the break. Plus, what about the benefits to farmers and ranchers in that one big, beautiful bill? You may not have even seen the benefits yet. You might not see the benefits really kick in until next year. We're going to get to some of those bright spots on the horizon as well. Coming up right after this, I got an email from Steve in Anaconda. And some of you ranchers are going to want to respond.
This is where Montana Talks Ag with Lane Nordlund.
Now that both USDA is funded and the 2018 Farm Bill is extended through September, will Congress work to pass a Farm Bill in 2026? Cam Quarles, CEO of the National Potato Council, weighs in.
I think the leaders of both the House and Senate Ag Committees really recognize the imperative of getting a Farm Bill done. The farm policy we're operating under right now was written in 2017 and 2018. And the world has just changed a lot in these intervening years. We really need an update, not just to take care of the agriculture that we see right in front of our faces, but also what we anticipate 5 years down the line. We owe it to producers to provide them with that level of certainty, and also just kind of thoughtfully figure out where does such a fundamental, really a national security issue like our food supply, how do we take care of that for, you know, the coming half a decade.
Will the midterm elections have any impact on the bill?
It's not impossible to do a farm bill in an election year, and a number of them have been done in election year. So I don't think that's a huge hurdle. Certainly for folks who come from agriculture-heavy states, and there are a few Senate seats up in agriculture-heavy states, having a farm bill to point to as a success would be quite helpful for those sitting members who are running for re-election again.
I'm Lane Nordlund.
Montana Talks, where you get the mic. Call in now at 406-294-0970. Here's your host, Aaron Flint.
Oh, man, I'll tell you what, if you're one of our rancher friend listeners out there, wait till you hear this email from Steve and Anaconda. I know you're going to want to weigh in. So I'm going to read the email from Steve and Anaconda, and then, hey, you can email us. You can send us a message on the Montana Talks app, or hopefully we'll have some time to sneak in some phone calls here before we end the show here this hour. So here's what Steve and Anaconda has to say. So we've been sharing the audio about the ranchers saying, finally, after all of these years, we're finally getting some better prices for our calves. And, you know, Russell Nimitz with the Western Egg Network made a great point. He's like, look, maybe these prices are right where they need to be, given all of the huge prices that ranchers are paying for everything else, all the input costs, energy costs, and then just to buy a pickup today, how much that costs, you know, how many calves you have to sell today compared to the 1970s. But here's what Stephen Anaconda says, and this is why I say some of you ranchers, this is going to be like a cattle prod. This one's going to fire you up. You might get a little ticked off at this one, but send us your response. Stephen Anaconda says this, yeah, cattle growers are happy as can be with high prices. To keep it that way, they are reining in the herd growth and socking it to everybody all the way up the chain to the consumer. Don't be fooled. That's from Steve and Anaconda. Now my quick reply to that would be, well, is actually, Steve, I've heard a much different story as I talk with cattle ranchers and with the producers, especially yesterday. They want to grow the herd. They desperately want to grow the herd. So how do you regrow the herd, though? Right now, look, if you're selling at these high prices, well, that means you also have to buy at high prices. But I know these ranchers in America, they desperately want to grow the herds higher. And frankly, that's how the supply and demand process will work, is that eventually that will help to regrow these herds as well here. But I also think these ranchers have been struggling for quite some time now, and so now they finally get a little bit of relief. But anyway, but like I said, I'd love to hear some ranchers out there actually respond to that email. You can message us on the Montana Talks app, or if we got time, we'll try to sneak in a phone call or two before we wrap up the hour. Back to it here with Brian Glenn from the American Farm Bureau Federation. What else are they tracking back in Washington, D.C.? What else are you tracking back in Washington, D.C.? Yes.
Oh, my gosh. What are we not tracking? Well, the government is back open. I think that was a 43-day shutdown, I think it was, a historic amount of time. We're glad to have folks back in their seats in Washington working for farmers and ranchers. Of course, the Trump administration did move to open back up FSA county offices, which was a welcome development, but they were working in a limited capacity. So now having the government back open, we can get those offices back up and running. We're tracking what was in that spending bill that reopened the government. It included a farm bill extension. So if you remember, it seems like it was a long time ago, but this was a big win for us when we got the One Big Beautiful Bill done and across the finish line July 4th.
Great point. Yep. You know, so many people are forgetting the accomplishments that have gotten across the finish line, especially in that One Big Beautiful Bill. Let's start there right after this, if we can. All right, I'm going to steal that line from Nicole Rolfe here. I was asking, I said, what is, you know, if you had to break down the importance of the Farm Bill, because, you know, our listeners that maybe aren't farmers and ranchers, they're always hearing about the Farm Bill. And she said it's the only safety net for our farmers. That's why the Farm Bill is so important. I thought that was such a great 10-second answer. Back to Brian Glenn with the American Farm Bureau. Brian, you know, we're approaching the end of the year, and I'm glad you mentioned the One Big Beautiful Bill. You know, doing away with the death tax that was just hovering over our farmers and ranchers. I mean, there's been so many victories that have been piled up, not just, you know, thanks to President Trump and the Congress over the last, but thanks to organizations like both of yours, the Montana Farm Bureau and the American Farm Bureau. Talk about what was in that One Big Beautiful Bill and really the difference an administration makes this year compared to one year ago, for example.
Yes. No, I'm glad that we can discuss this and get in here. One Big Beautiful Bill included a lot of major priorities. priorities for the Farm Bureau family. I know I was certainly on the phone with Nicole probably every day talking about efforts that we can do together to unify our voice and get that bill across the finish line. It included a significant investment in the farm safety net. So those were much needed updates made to Title I programs like the agriculture risk coverage program, the price loss coverage program. Also included a significant investment in crop insurance, expanding premium access to farmers and ranchers. So a lot of farm programs they were able to address and update in this package, and that is really a huge thanks to our congressional leadership and the administration for recognizing that those programs hadn't been updated since the 2018 Farm Bill. Mm-hmm. I mean, it has been years now. So they recognize the need to deliver support, more certainty for our farmers and ranchers right now, and they were able to take advantage of the opportunity. I don't know, Nicole, if you had any additional points to make about One Big Beautiful Bill.
I think the other thing that we were excited about were all the permanency of the tax provisions that we were really worried about losing as they expired at the end of this year. So things like the estate tax exemption level, $199 expensing for family companies, deductions, all kinds of really important things that are important to all small businesses, but especially farms and ranches.
Well, I'm talking about the perfect storm that would have been created if you have, you know, farmers with low prices, high input costs. Those input costs are finally starting to go down a little bit. And then you have the death tax come in, and you could just wipe out so many family farms across America, which is why I'm glad to hear from Brian that there is more talk about a short-term relief package for farmers that are struggling right now, because in the midst of these trade wars, food security is national security. We can't allow any of these farms to go under. Nicole Rolfe, what else would you want to highlight as we get short on time here? We've got about a minute and a half to go. So many wins over the past few months that your organization has fought for. The conservation rule.
Yeah.
The Biden administration wanted to change our multiple-use federal lands to allow for non-use. Basically, they were going to strip away all sorts of access on our so-called public lands, and you guys helped fight that.
We did. We were very concerned that they were essentially elevating a non-use, or conservation, as they like to call it, as one of our multiple uses. I mean, our federal lands are important to farmers and ranchers for grazing, obviously, but also for loggers, miners, recreationalists. And so elevating a non-use to equal footing was something we were very concerned about. We pushed back really hard on that rule, commenting. I mean, there was a lawsuit, which some of my members were a part of, and they still finalized it without any positive changes. So we were very pleased to see this administration move forward with rescinding that rule, and we actually submitted comments just 2 weeks ago supporting the rescission of that rule. You know, they're already working on it, revamping the grazing rules, which haven't been done for 30 years. Those are going to address most of the things that purported to it, that other rule that was very flawed, purported to, you know, work on. So we are in a really good position, I think, to be able to get rid of that rule and move forward with things that work better for folks who use federal lands.
Now, there's even more highlights where all of that came from all of our coverage from the Montana Farm Bureau Convention. Go to MontanaTalks.com, download the app if you want to get more. And big thanks, by the way, to Rebecca Colnar with the Farm Bureau. She helped line up so many great guests, sending folks our way. Appreciate all she does. And by the way, she's a great contributor to Range Magazine as well. For those of you that get a Range Magazine, that subscribe to that. If you don't subscribe to Range Magazine, boy, I tell you what a great publication that is. Okay, so I mentioned, by the way, phone lines are open. Yeah, if you want to call in or if you're a rancher out there and you want to respond to that email from Steve and Anaconda, give us a ring, 406-294-0970. I got a couple of messages that came in. After I read Stephen Anaconda's email, Okotoks in Laurel says, how about we address the meat packer mafia? That will lower our costs, specifically talking about consumers. All right, Okotoks, thanks for the message. A listener in Jordan says this, does he not realize that President Trump has just launched an investigation into the meat packers? That is why the consumer prices are so high. It will be great to see what we find out there. Mr. Anaconda maybe needs to do his homework. That's what a listener in Jordan had to say. And meanwhile, a rancher friend in Scobie says this: hey, Anaconda, drought. And then there might have been another choice word or two that I probably can't use on the radio. Yeah, you can message us on the Montana Talks app or give us a call, 406-294-0970. We'll be back right after this quick break. Phone lines are open for you. Let's see. I think we got Chris in Columbia Falls coming up right after this. So, Chris, stand by. Looking forward to hearing your thoughts right after the break.
History.
Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Yeah, looking forward to hearing your reactions to our coverage from the Montana Farm Bureau Federation convention in Missoula yesterday, and then sharing more highlights today. Let's go to Chris in Columbia Falls listening to KJJR. Chris, what's your thoughts? Thanks for calling in.
Yeah, Aaron, are we subsidizing, the farmers with the beef? Are we subsidizing like Canada? They subsidize up there and they wrap their timber cuts and made in Canada and sell them here locally. So isn't there a lot of other things they could possibly do? The other day, Trump said that, why aren't we making more processing plants in the Midwest? So these farmers and ranchers who have cattle back there don't have to go so far. So, I mean, are there three other things we can do except to try to feed the world at higher prices? And, that's why we have tariffs. That's why we teach other nations how to fish. There's lots of things we can do, and we still haven't restructured the timber industry. It's still way out of balance. So we get these folks to realize that they have to do things like the old West when they herded their cattle up all the way up to Montana from Texas or something, and when they had things going on back down there, they lost everything they could because they didn't understand the system then, and the cattle froze. And there's pictures showing that, but the ranchers and the people that invested in cattle, out here in the West, they lost them. They froze to death. They didn't realize they had to bring them in and herd them in the wintertime. So there's a lot of other things we can do other than just keep jacking prices up so it makes everybody feel good. It just doesn't make any sense.
Well, I'll tell you what, your point about more meat processing facilities, I mean, amen to that point in particular. That's what we all want to see more of so that we're not so reliant on this tiny handful of meat packers, and especially foreign-owned meat packers. Yeah, so amen to that point. Something you said, too, about the timber industry. Look, this is what we have to rebuild in America. We've got to rebuild our meat processing capacity, just like we've got to rebuild our sawmills. Somebody was telling me a story. Was it the Chinese or the Russians? They had a ship off the coast of Oregon. Because the environmental left in America destroyed all the timber mills, and then these federal judges like Don Malloy destroyed our timber industry in America. So, but now you've got logging companies can go in and cut down the logs, but where do they send the logs after they've cut them down? After the left destroyed all the sawmills, it was either the Russians or the Chinese. They had a ship off the coast of Oregon. And the logs would be shipped out to the ship on the coast of Oregon, and then they were basically operating a sawmill off the ship, off the coast of America, because the environmental leftists and the Democrat judges shut down the industry on American soil. And it was a very reputable source who told me that story as well, by the way. Some of you could probably pull up a news source right now as we speak. But, I mean, just think about how crazy that is. Think about how crazy what they have done to the United States of America is and what Trump is working to rebuild right now. Chris, thanks for the call. Let's see. Finley Warden, our guest producer today. Finley, send us Robert in Belgrade. Let's get Robert on before we run out of time. Here, I had another soundbite that I wanted to share with you, but let's keep the phone calls coming. Robert, what's your thoughts? Thanks for the call.
Well, there's a lot of reasons why the beef is so high. One of them is one you have covered a lot, is got rid of the government lie that red meat is not healthy. It is healthy. It's one of the healthiest things there is out there. People are realizing that, and the demand is higher because of that. And, I think everybody agrees with that. Finally, got rid of the government lie.
Interesting. Well, and then the other angle is too, is like, okay, let's look at these prices compared to historical prices, wage growth, et cetera. You know, and that's why I thought what Gene Curry said about, hey, you know, back in the 70s, you could have purchased a new pickup by selling 10 or 12 steer calves. Today, you got to sell 30 steer calves to buy a new pickup. And so, you know, it's important to put some of these numbers in perspective as well. But, yeah, we all love our beef, especially our Montana beef. We want more of it. That's why we want more local meat processing, et cetera. Robert, thanks for the call. There was something else that Russell Nimitz had to say yesterday, and I was going to play a little bit of audio of a conversation that I had with Russell Nimitz that really also put, you know, some of these costs into perspective as well. And kind of ties in with the point that he was making, which is like, hey, are these prices right now good for cattle ranchers? Of course, they've had to struggle with lower prices here for a lot of years, but are these prices right now good? Yeah, but let's put that in perspective. Let me see here. Yeah, I don't have time to get to it here before we run out of time today on the show, but maybe I will save that one. It's like a three-minute clip that I'll have. I will save that three-minute clip for you for Friday's show because it's very important perspective to put on these prices here, given all the challenges facing our ranchers with input costs and then other purchasing, you know, things like purchasing a pickup, for example. So, all right, we'll save that for Freedom Friday. We'll have plenty of time to take more of your phone calls on Freedom Friday here on Montana Talks as well. It's the best part of the show, taking your phone calls, because Montana Talks is the show where you get to talk and be heard all across the state.